This program is brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM. If you like what you hear and want to support our work, please make a donation at fundraiser.resonance.fm.
Sendung Wellenlänge. Vous écoutez la transmission longueur d'onde. Udite la trasmissione lunghezza d'onde. You are hearing the transmission called wavelength.
good afternoon. You're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and www.resonancefm.com on the net. And that opening track was called Post Electronic Rhythms by Daniel R. Wilson, who's in the studio today to describe his project of, what is it, Dan? Post Electronic Music?
Well, hello. Thanks for having me. Yes, it's another opportunity to promote post electronic music, which is something
whenever, is that what you're here for, to promote?
Yeah, to make it known, to you know, to try to get a foothold in the
On the slippery slope.
Well, on the slippery slope, on the cultural staircase,
right?
On the
Is it an escalator coming down, and you're trying to run up it?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. And it's also it hasn't been oiled for a while, and there's lots of banana skins around, and there's people that push you back down again.
Right.
There's ticket inspectors everywhere.
Okay.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
It's all right. Okay. And the CD that you've asked me to play that opening track from has a photograph of Inspector Morse on the cover.
Yes, that's an irrelevant observation, but it happens
to be... It's relevant to me because I'm holding the CD cover in my hand.
Well, I just...
And it's got Inspector Morse on the front.
It's very difficult to find CD cases nowadays, and it's the first one I grabbed before I left this morning. That what you just heard was recorded yesterday, and when trying to imagine how you'd play it on the show, I had the option of trying to dig out a USB key, which are very easy to lose, they're very small, or just burn a CDR. And so I burnt the CDR.
Nothing to do with Morse code then?
There's no, you know, there's no Morse code, and that's quite a rare CD actually. The soundtrack to Inspector Morse, the ITV serial from the 1990s and early 2000s.
Yeah,
I've never listened to it, but I used the case to put other caseless CDs inside. To preserve their condition.
So this is a CDR of yours then?
Yeah, just for the purpose of this show, promote that thing that you just heard that was recorded yesterday, which was a piece of post-electronic music recorded on an assembly made up of strings, springs, pulleys, prods, cranks, needles, elastic bands, to try to emulate some of the conditions and phenomena of electronic music, where it's a process of applying the techniques of classical electronic music with its attention to wave shaping and modulation onto purely acoustic systems.
But it's still electronic, isn't it?
Only insofar as the signal being picked up by the stereo microphone and the piezoelectric pickup is being converted to a signal. But the actual processes, the diffusion of the sound is happening acoustically in the air. It is being sustained by an electromagnetic force field. But that's a technology that's 100 years old. I see that as permissible. It's not affecting. It's only standing in for the sustain element in the attack, decay, sustain, release envelope, which is a common electronic music figuration. The sustain element is sustained by force fields.
Right. So is it what you'd call a return to analog or not?
In a big way, yeah. It's going back. It's almost steampunk. It's trying to take some of the techniques and abstract ideals of electronic music of the 20th century. And especially, I think it's quite relevant today when we're looking at ecological crises and various possible apocalyptic scenarios, and it's a way of taking what we've assimilated culturally in terms of music and experimental music and wondering how can we reapply that in a situation where natural resources are completely compromised, electricity is at a premium, and we want to make rhythmic music with emphasis on tones and rhythm, and we can't.
Right.
We revert to Victorian technologies of electromagnetic feedback and sympathetic resonance.
Would the conclusion of that be against recording altogether? I mean, would you just propose live performances where there is absolutely no need to reproduce it?
That's exactly right. And I find it more difficult to do that live because there's very it's very difficult to get commissions when your equipment weighs a ton and it takes up the size of a studio mixing desk. It's quite large scale right. things. There's a wheelbarrow in that you just heard that was providing some of the acoustic reverb. And I have busked electroacoustically with a scrounged wox, cooking wox, mm-hmm. With electromagnetic sustainers on them. And it raises an interesting issue because it looks like begging. You've got this bowl, you're yep. putting things in the bowl to change the timbre of the sound, mm. Coins and notes. And I think we did this live on a Wavelength, a fundraising special.
Yeah.
And I've already told this story, I've just realised.
That's all right. It's probably quite a while ago. I'm sure it'll be slightly different now.
There's a distinction between begging and busking, in Cambridge at least. And begging's illegal, but busking's permitted.
Begging is illegal,
yeah.
but busking is permitted.
Yeah.
But busking, where you're asking for money... Or is it just performing?
No, performing. You're allowed to perform and have a mat and a hat with some coinage to be offered. Mm. You're even allowed to sell CDs, I believe, as well. Uh-huh. But when this, it brings up very elementary undergraduate discussions of what constitutes music with these PCSOs. And you say, look, this music, and they say, well, it's not, you're just doing a tone and I can't even hear it because I haven't bought my wheelbarrow that would amplify it and make it a bit louder. But it's quite a delicate sound. You throw in coins, the timbre shifts. I actually welcome people chucking in their coins into the wok, even though that's my instrument. It's like a busker playing guitar and asking them to chuck the coins in the hole of the guitar. But it's a very elongated
Were you doing this with a view to actually raising money for yourself, or is it just a sort of a performance art piece?
It's a very good question. I don't know.
Do you need money?
Yeah, I was hoping to at least get the train fare back.
Yeah. Did you succeed?
Yeah, I did actually. Yeah, I got £15-16.
So you're not actually busking to get money in terms of earning a living because you can't do anything else?
Oh, no, I am. Everything I use is scrounged from bins. Nowhere will employ me. I've got over 600 failed job applications since I left university, since 2004. I thought I might be the only one. I'm not sure. Maybe there's something wrong in my applications. I've had professors look over the applications. I've tried, and not even charity shops would employ me. They're voluntary. I've ended up just looking in their bins instead.
Right.
And kind of taking it upon myself to invent my own jobs. If no one will employ me, I'll just call myself a cultural salvage diagnostician.
So you haven't arrived at the point where you think you're unemployable yet?
Very close.
That would be the end? When you get to that point, do you think you would cease to apply for jobs and you just accept that you're unemployable?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, actually. Just like rolling around in the wreckage of your life and just roly-polying down the hill without any regard for CVs.
Right. Well, I suppose it would take some of the pressure off.
Yeah.
But you do actually, you're on your... From you, I discovered the term bin diving. I'd never heard of that before.
Oh, okay.
You introduced me to this concept.
I would prefer to be remembered for the post-electronic music concept.
Sure, but this is one of your activities, isn't it? Which obviously plays into finding the instruments and even making money, because you have found quite rare books in your bin diving exploits.
Yeah. I mean, we're in the midst of we're probably in the most wasteful time that's ever existed in the history of the human race. You see perfectly good phones. The phones that I'm using are found, and food can be freely found, obviously. There's a big community of freegans that search for food.
Right.
There's also a counter movement of people that deliberately spoil the food with bleach. There's also the books are obviously spoilt with milk. And I once came early to try to catch in the act of who's putting milk on the books.
Yeah.
Not just books, but there's all kinds of electronic things being spoilt with unpleasantnesses. There's mouse traps being set inside the bins.
Is this because people know what's, they suspect that someone else is going to be plundering the bin.
Yeah, they must be aware that they're throwing away valuable things. And I'm not the only one. There's other people as well.
But why would people object to that? Why would people stop you trying to do that?
Consult the local paper of my town. It affects the, what was the phrase? There were letter writers, and I keep some of the letters. One of them featured in the film by Toby Clarkson, Little Tsunamis.
Right.
They called it pitiful street theatre that ruins the picturesqueness of this historic market town. There's the kind of very typical right-wing views of it's gypsies doing this.
Yeah.
And this aggressions from van drivers is once a car tried to actually crush me against the bin. A drunk person once said, "Excuse me, mate," and puked next to me into the bin onto a pillow. And I was so annoyed at this. It was quite scary, so it took me really by surprise. And I took the pillow out and smacked him with it. And his sick was on the pillow, and the pillow was broken, the feathers came out.
Yeah.
And I would be in a very different position today if he successfully smashed his bottle on the side of the bin, which he began smashing because I think he intended to do something quite aggressive and stab me with something.
But he doesn't sound like the kind of letter-writing person who is trying to prevent...
You never know. When he's sober, he might be completely...
Right. I mean, yeah. Okay. Well, let's get back to your project of post-electronic music.
Okay.
How's it... progressing? What do you, I mean, you've been at it for quite some time now.
Very long time.
And you play with a band. Do I call it a band? What do I call it? A group?
Electroacoustic quartet. Maybe.
Okay. Called Oscillatorial Binage.
Yes.
Binage keeps cropping up, doesn't it?
Binage.
This word bin is...
Well, it's about recycling and the oscillatory nature of the sounds we produce, as well as the nature of the presumably what's being buried now.
Right.
Will be exhumed as a natural resource in 1,000 years, maybe.
So, the quartet, I can't imagine that all members of the quartet are engaged in the same scavenging activities that you
They are.
Are
I
they?
Mean, the ones that have jobs actually are in the position of actually scrounging their own workplace and seeing what's being thrown away. I shouldn't mention where they work, but because it's not really looked upon, you can't really do it. But
should we mention them by name? We've got Chris Weaver.
Chris Weaver,
who's what an archivist, librarian.
Yeah.
Toby Clarkson, who's a filmmaker and film editor, and Fari Bradley.
Yeah, a broadcaster. She does the show Six Pillars to Persia on Resonance.
Right. Okay.
And she does music as well, DJing. She's actually more pop. She gives us the more popular edge. Actually, the crowd appeal because of the music she does. It's quite it's accessible, it's rhythmic, and it's interesting.
But she doesn't go into bins, surely.
Possibly not, but she's happily to build things from the bins. So she's got an ecological, conscience.
Fine. And where do you play? I mean, if you've got anything coming up where people might see.
Well, there's an album hopefully coming up that was recorded as long ago as 2013.
Right.
And owing to lack of outlets, we struggled. And in that time, we kind of made up our carbon footprint, maybe, of our train journey to France to record the album with suitcases full of electromagnetic gubbins. And the album's called Agitations, Post-Electronic Sounds. It should be out in a few months.
Hmm.
And it's full of music that... challenges the perceptions of tone. It looks at the fluidity of electronic and acoustic sounds.
Would somebody listening to it for the first time, would they hear the difference? Would they know that it was not electronic music?
Yeah, there's something more interesting that happens when you use acoustic systems. You've got the equivalence. So effects that you use in electronic music, like distortion, you can achieve with ball bearings on the surface of a vibrating surface, which creates a form of distortion. You can then level that using dampers that mechanically press into the surface. Then you've got echo that can be done with grills or springs or sympathetic resonance or large objects. And then you've got other effects. But in acoustic systems, they all blend together in a strange way. So you find that the grills actually have their own resonant frequency that then funnels back into the actual drive frequency, and often sometimes objects, you get something called mechanical hysteresis, where a constant hitting or percussing of an object changes its qualities. It actually changes its resonant structure. You get unforeseen effects. Sometimes you get in moments where things come alive, different strands of feedback and activity then create a state of emergence, which is large-scale sophisticated behavior emerging from an aggregate of tiny things, systems, variables. It happens. You get miracles. And using these apparatuses, which look quite unappealing from a layman's point of view, but they're salvaged objects that can be...
I mean, did you set out first of all to try and reproduce the sound of electronic music? Are you mimicking electronic music by other means, or is it a unique kind of form?
Yeah. What you end up with a unique kind of form, but it's presented, and its aim is to mimic electronic sounds, and also show you that actually there's the infinite world of the real, as Chris Weaver called it, is out there, and it can be found just in a drinks carton. That's a module. Modular synthesizers are fetishized as being the the ultimate electronic sound making thing. Actually, modules can be freely found in bins, in streets, in the just in anywhere,
right?
And these have sound processing capabilities.
Okay, should we play another track from your album, or do you want to talk some more?
I could go back a bit and talk about a recent project that's completely different called Radionics Radio. There's a similarity between Radionics Radio and post electronic music in that I work with found frequencies, and the frequencies are this time purely electronic, and they're selected, they're crowdsourced actually, and they were crowdsourced during a project here at Resonance under the auspices of Sound and Music's embedded scheme, where I was kind of composer in residence, I suppose, and I was inviting people to intuitively think of a thought, any thought that you want, a cardboard box, telephone, and choose frequencies that they think correspond to the thought. So while there's a kind of dowsing with an oscillator, and this was on a web app that's no longer available, and people submitted all kinds of frequencies, thought frequencies, and then I made music restricted by those frequencies, and the results are microtonal.
How would you submit a frequency? How do you?
You'd go to the Radionics Radio website, which was radionicsradio.co.uk. The app would produce a tone, and with the a laptop, you'd move your finger on the trackpad of the computer or the mouse, if you've got a desktop computer, and if you felt a stick or an intuitive sense that this frequency is corresponding to what I'm thinking, you click, and that stores one frequency. Then you keep going, and you keep scanning up the whole frequency spectrum until you've got this list that somehow psychically represents what you're thinking.
So the suggestion is that your thought process is what being passed through your finger.
Yeah, I don't know the exact. The people have different explanations of what's going on, because it's actually based on an established fringe science that's completely discredited by the medical establishment, called radionics, which goes back as far as the 1910s, the 1920s. In the 60s, a laboratory, a husband and wife team called Delaware Laboratories in Oxford, began using electronic tones to embody psychological conditions like fear and anxiety. And to do that, they were basically holding up a pendulum or rubbing surfaces to try to intuit what audio frequency corresponds to anxiety or fear or frustration, and whether they can treat that or detect it by replaying those frequencies. Their experiments didn't get much further because George Delaware died in 1969, and the company was carried on by his wife, when they reverted to very non-powered radionic techniques, which have more in common actually with things nowadays like Gwyneth Paltrow's Goop company, which it's all about new age modalities and like water.
So is there a healing element?
Yeah, there is a healing element, and it began as a medical pseudoscience, but I was taking the idea that you can encode the thought or psychological anything as a, you can encode something as a set of frequencies, because I like the opportunity to compose with these completely unique, arbitrary microtonal scales. So lists would come in and I'd get all the octaves of the frequencies and then build up pieces of music electronically that embody that thought. The next track that I'd like you to play, if you can, is actually never been broadcast, and it's comprised of two thoughts submitted, one of them submitted by Edmund Chu. I don't know who that is. Henry Wong to love Edmund Chu, that's his thought. And it's mixed with another set of frequencies sent by Luke, I Feel Amazing.
You're listening to Resonance 104.4 FM, and today's guest is Daniel Wilson, and that track was called Radionics Radio, Henry Wong to Love Edmund Chu, and I Feel Amazing. So that was, is that two tracks?
No, that's two...
Two titles.
Two tuning systems embedded in one song. You heard at the end there those two scales, going ascending scales. Those are the pure frequencies as they were submitted.
Oh, really? Oh, I see. That's what they submitted to you.
Yeah, as a list, a text list of numbers. And that those are the renderings of what they heard as they were selecting those frequencies that supposedly corresponded to those thoughts.
Right. And so you've converted that into in your computer.
Yeah, and this is what I'm getting. People often, this project has actually caused me a bit of grief sometimes. I think people have assumed that I'm some kind of New Age... people are asking me to cure their chihuahuas. They're quite angry that the app is no longer available because it was curing members of their family. And I'm quite concerned about that because I've never set myself up to be a kind of medical practitioner or do any kind of alternative practice. This is purely it's drawing upon a tradition, but it's an experimental music project, really.
But people were saying that it was working for them.
Yeah, it's like, I think it's like faith healing. If you believe it works, it does. But what was the question again? Sorry.
Well, I mean, that was presumably the whatever it was that was working would have been before the conversion into this sort of musical track.
Yeah, yeah. They would presumably use that. In radionics, numbers are more important. So actually, a lot of radionic equipment has dials on it with numbers, but there's nothing inside it, or there's nothing that produces power, that produces sound. Delaware laboratories were one of the exceptions. They introduced oscillators, but or at least one oscillator powered equipment. But usually the numbers are themselves part of a spiritual system where the combination of numbers has some kind of energy field. I can't go too much into it because I've researched it a lot, but it's very contentious. And it's got me a reputation a bit as someone who thinks they can cure chihuahuas with
why chihuahuas?
Sound. Well, it seems to be like this regular person that kept asking me to. I did one chihuahua. She's asking me to do the other chihuahuas.
Right. Okay.
They had worms. One of the tracks on the Radiance Radio CD was Clear Up Fluke Worms, Blood Fluke Worms.
Right.
And apparently that was effective, that one. But
Right.
Yeah. The track you just heard wasn't on the album because it had...
Are there other practitioners of this? I mean, you're not alone in this.
No, well, I'm alone in making songs. But this is the point, that the songs were the punchline, or not the punchline, the reveal is that the process of composition itself is very similar. If you for instance wanted to write a song about a black horse, you would choose a series
it's
of
funny you should say that
it's very funny because you actually lived in a pub called the Black Horse
indeed, but you knew that you're not being psychic now. Knew that often.
I was almost fraudulent medium now.
Yes, exactly. Well, that's how they do it, isn't it, those stage things. I'm supposed to sort of say that's amazing, how did you know that?
No, I just looked on Google, and you told me anyway.
Okay.
And also, it's not on Google anyway. Or is it?
Anyway.
All
will be revealed in due course, of course, but we won't go down that
road. Coming back to the Black Horse thing, you're doing a song, and you choose rhythms and tones and scales, musical scales that correspond to what you believe is a black horse, perhaps a galloping tempo, or maybe if it's a pub, a more downbeat tempo with a slurry tempo with a piano being burned. Another story of your
piano.
So the point is that it's intuitive, everything's intuitive. Selecting the frequencies by this strange radionic process is very similar to composition, and I'm just drawing the parallels between composition and psychical activity. I didn't want to say psychical, but
didn't you? Why?
I suppose it is. Radionics is. I've been on the fence for a long time to appease both the radionic community and the electronic music community.
Radionic community now.
Oh God, yeah. There's a big. Sorry to say. Oh God. It's. I was actually quite shocked myself at how prevalent. It's quite. I mean, it's like a happy community. Actually, you get the odd. You do get the odd wizard.
Oh, really?
I won't mention any. Radionics is generally used as a force for good to bring about world healing. Doesn't seem to be working, but I don't want to negativize it too much. Maybe it is working. Maybe it's doing something behind the scenes.
So approximately how many people might be in the radionics community?
As a rough gauge to answer that, only about 10% of all frequencies that came in by my app, Radionics Radio app, came from the people that learn of this through resonance. The other 90% were people from around the world who are radionics practitioners who heard about the app through a radionics forum. And so they were using it in earnest. They weren't interested in what I was doing with the frequencies. They were just using it to... as part of their modality, I suppose.
Yeah. So are we talking hundreds or thousands?
Thousands. Over
thousands of people
around the
world. The
total frequencies submitted were 3,500, over 3,500. A lot of them were zero hertz, actually, so I couldn't use them. Right. But they'd obviously been using, they'd spent a lot of time on this app and were submitting things.
And would these people meet physically with these people?
I don't know.
You don't
know. I have interviewed some, actually. They're very, you know, very nice people, actually.
Right.
Yeah.
You hope.
No, they are. Well, okay. I mean, there are some very nefarious submissions. They're like, send death energy to Rupij Pari. I don't know who Rupij Pari is, but obviously someone in the world is using my app to send death energy to someone.
Right. So it's like death rays.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
So there's a real mixture of intents. I believe, actually, someone was using my app to mess up the 2016 elections. They were trying to say Hillary Clinton, crooked lady, yes. And Trump, get Trump in. Okay. So there was some...
I don't know much about it, if anything at all, but I think during the Second World War, I think towards the end of the Second World War, that people were employed, or they... As far as
during the Second World War, there was actually
they employed witches almost to do sort of strange rituals in the forest somewhere.
Germans that were doing that.
No. This is in Britain.
Journal of a very rare journal called the Journal of the British Society of Dowsers, and you had all kinds of things going on during the war to predict where a bombing raid might happen.
Right.
And after the war, there was a lot of controversy over whether Hitler was still alive or not, and people were using dowsers, map dowsing, to try to find where he might be in the world, and the consensus was he's actually in Russia. So it's got there's a big culture surrounding radionics and dowsing. And, yeah.
Now, you were going to... are we ready for...
While we're on something, we're getting into story mode now. I'm coming up to something called inductive storytelling, but I'd like you... The CD I gave you has a track three.
Yes.
If you activate play now and keep the levels up so we can...
Are you sure it's this track, which is only 4:37, or is it track four?
It's
with a very long one.
No. Track four would be...
Track four is 16 minutes.
No, that's a soundtrack to something. I hope that you will.
I see.
Find
so this is Mumbling Symphony. It's called
Mumbling Symphony. And I'll explain that in a minute.
Okay, so I should play it now then. Yeah.
Yeah. Is to reassure listeners, that's not me doing this now, that's on the recording.
Right.
During recording, I was looking at a book, and the whole practice of radionics got me into the idea that, which is quite popular in ambient music today, that recordings can somehow store an essence of thought. One of the principal originators of this idea is Chris Watson, the soundscape artist, who believes that the essence of spirit and history can be stored somehow in a recording of a place. So in those microsonic vibrations, somehow you can hear a battle, like the Civil War, the English Civil War in a field somewhere. So mm-hmm. My question to you is... Try to imagine, this is like almost a scientific experiment. If this works, we're doing a world first here. This is an amazing moment.
Okay.
Try to guess the theme of the book I was looking at while I recorded this.
Right.
It's been pitched down slightly to avoid you recognizing any words, but the microphone cable that I was speaking into or mumbling into went across the book. So the book is somehow psychically ingrained in a process that I call siphonics.
All right. Should I try and guess in stages? Should I try and sort of
Yeah, I'll try to steer you towards...
Well, does the sea come into it?
The sea?
Yeah.
No, it's not a nautical book.
Oh. So it's nothing to do with something... Is it a known book title? I mean, would I know the book?
I don't want to give too much away.
No.
It's got a theme. All books
have
a theme,
but it's not like sort of Jamaica Inn by Daphne du Maurier.
No. No, it's a very interesting... but it's not
so it's nothing...
It could contain the words Jamaica and Inn, in fact. You could be picking up on the quantum...
Well, that was my first stab.
Keep listening.
I thought I picked up the word rebel.
Damn. you're very close. I shouldn't have actually been so sensible to actually articulate words. It's unavoidable. I was trying to speak in tongues. It wasn't quite working.
I did pick it. I did hear the word rebel, I think.
Then you're close.
Not rebel without a cause. I don't even know who wrote that, but that was in about 1958 or 59.
Okay, you've got the kind of era correct. I'm gonna reveal the book now.
Okay.
You're floundering. This is the book. And I'm presenting it to you.
You're presenting it to me. I'm looking at the book. Well, actually, should I describe it?
You can.
It's called Top Pop Stars. And there's a picture of a very young Cliff Richard on the front and Adam Faith on the back. Well, so Rebel Without a Cause actually wasn't bad, was it? I mean, that's quite close. Late 50s.
It was the rebel. I shouldn't have said rebel. That was a big mistake on my part.
But how did the word rebel crop up? Did you say it?
It was during the process of recording this. I was thinking of having it silent, but because this is going on radio, silence isn't that amenable to transmission. Although in 1927 there was a famous experiment by the BBC to convey thoughts by radio by Oliver Lodge and co.
Okay.
But anyway, I thought silence on resonance would be a bit...
Yes.
I'm coming on your show, I should make an effort. So I tried to at least agitate the air with voice.
Right.
And I was very careful not to articulate anything in the book, but Rebel obviously crept up.
It was only very slight, it was like rebel, like that. And that was the only word that I could actually ascertain from this sound, from this noise. I'll keep on listening.
Well, the experiment's over now.
I know, but I'm just listening anyway to see if I can hear a word.
Okay.
Like pop.
Oh, maybe there could have been a pop, pop, pop.
Yeah, there could have been, yeah. So what was your... tell me what the process was again. You have read... You've described this book or you've read from it or something to create that? No.
I was not interested in it at all. I just found it in a bin.
Right.
And thought this is a random book. Bins give you an infinity of randomness, seemingly, just especially in the charity shops as well.
Yeah.
And any shops that just have anything in the bins, you can find a random object. That was a random object that I found 2 days ago and opened it. Try to avoid reading it. Just let the essence of the book come through. I'm not a practitioner of this.
I mean,
kind
if
of
I
thing,
open the book, I could open the book any page, couldn't I?
You
see
could.
What it, I'll do that. Okay. I've opened the
book. That's called bibliomancy. You open the book randomly and read from that paragraph that your eye is set upon.
Right.
And it would have some significance.
Well, I've opened the book at Frankie Vaughan. He's the most. And it says Frankie is most definitely a family man and enjoys most of all the time he spends with Stella and the kids. I mean, I was sort of, I'm desperately searching for some reference to Jamaica, but not finding it.
Or the word in, even?
No. Hmm. Although...
Daphne?
Well, Frankie is a great family man and loves his home and family more than anything else. Their home is a large 5-bedroomed house in northwest London, which Frankie and Stella call Oak Lodge.
Close to Jamaica.
It's a big sort of house, but it's in northwest London. Never mind. Okay.
You're getting onto synchronicity.
Yeah, exactly.
This is a whole different thing. I was just interested in the idea of siphonics, the idea that somehow the microphone can capture something more than the sound. It's not necessarily something I take too seriously, but it's something that is pursued in earnest by a whole generation of ambient soundscape musicians. I think it adds some excitement and interest as well to listening itself, the process of listening.
Okay.
The idea that, I mean, there's a great exhibition recently that you may have seen at the Hayward Gallery, years ago, 2015, I think, The Art of the Invisible.
Right.
Which didn't touch upon sound too much, but there was a piece... famous piece. I don't know if it was there or not. I'm not telepathic, but there was a piece by Robert Barry. Robert Barry did telepathic piece.
Okay.
It's in the gallery somewhere, but he's off-site somewhere conveying the art piece to you from a distance. Nobody knows what it is. But
Yes, he's a conceptual artist, isn't he?
Yeah.
So it would be, yes. So we don't know if that worked or not. I think Susan Hiller was quite involved in sort of psychical research and so on, I think.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Hmm. All right, Dan. So what are you going to conduct another experiment on me or something? We were going to do some sort of strange reading thing.
Yeah, I thought we'd this could be a whole show in itself, but this is something that isn't entirely original. Well, no, it's not original. It's an old tradition, really. But it's something that I've got some prompts. I shouldn't have any prompts, really. But these are just, I need to credit the person who really is the originator of this is Andrew Clover. Mm. He's a very famous and suave director and comedy writer. He came to my school once, and I wasn't there, but he gave a kind of motivational
where were
talk,
you?
Talk. I was skiving. I was looking bins, actually. I was.
Where were you? You were expelled, weren't you?
Don't say that.
No, weren't you?
Yeah, but it's...
What for?
Lots of... it was a target-driven school, actually. They could see that I wasn't going to achieve the A-levels that they could see. And technically, I should have been at college, really. It's a school that, you know, they go on to fifth year, and then in sixth form, you do the A-levels. And it was quite clear that I wasn't going to get the target A grades. Mm. And they had a kind of campaign of... making it as unpleasant as possible for the low achievers to make them leave. And me, along with some other people, were asked to go to the canteen once and deposit cutlery. And we were told the cutlery was deposited too noisily. Then we had to see the headmaster, and then we shouted at. And this is at an age when you could have been at college. You could have a driving license. And so it's ridiculous, really. And they'd hoping that I'd leave, and I did in the end. Gradually.
So you were sort of eased out?
Eased out gradually. I kept going back to going to the drum room to record the acoustics of drums. Anyway, I'm telling a story, and this is actually what I'm coming on to now. Inductive storytelling is what I'm calling it. It's a form of storytelling which is more akin to hypnosis, and this is something Andrew Clover has pioneered, where you tell a story. I'd place you somewhere. I'd say, William, you're in the Jamaica Inn. No, you're at the Black Horse. You're at your pub, which you know quite well in your mind. Hmm. And I'd draw out a story. I'd say you can smell something. And you'd draw up. Abandon that. That's an example of the technique of this story.
I've gone back then. I was picturing the interior of the pub.
Oh, sorry.
And I was starting to smell.
Well, maybe you can go back there.
No, it's all right. Carry on. Okay. I've digressed, haven't I?
Okay. I'm just demonstrating what Andrew Clover does. He's quite interventionist. He would actually steer you away from things. I'm interested in the hypnotic potential of this technique of inductive storytelling. By the way, Andrew Clover has 7 rules of storytelling. He doesn't let anyone know the rules until you commission him to do a talk at your institution.
Right.
But I don't know the rules. We're completely unprofessional. This is rustic storytelling at its finest, really. So we don't know what's going to happen here. The prompts I've got here are just to say, make sure you credit Andrew Clover, because I don't want to seem like I'm copying someone. This is going to be almost a form of hypnosis. I'm going to try to resist intervening too much in your story, and it will be soundtracked with a piece of ambient music I recorded yesterday, which is track 4 on that CD. It could help. It might impede your judgment. It's a Wednesday. You're at the bookshop where you work on a Wednesday, which is opposite a very famous modern art gallery by the Bankside. And a strange insect is flapping about. There's no customers in the shop, so it's up to you whether you kill the insect or not. What can you describe the insect, or what your feelings are?
Well, I'm thinking of a bat.
What's that doing there?
Well, it's like a big insect, isn't it? Sort of a bit.
I think it's a warm. Is it cold? No, it's cold blood. I don't know. That's not part of the.
Should I erase the bat?
No. No, the bat is unerasable. It's appeared.
Okay.
It's a problem.
Right.
You don't want bat droppings all over the books in the bookshop.
No.
High-end art
bookshop. That's what came to mind was a sort of... In fact, strangely, I did have a dream the other night with something that looked like a large square beetle-type creature.
Oh.
Sort of a hard-shelled thing. But it was very square.
Where was it?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. It was just in the dream somewhere. It was sort of probably on a wall or something.
Oh dear.
And so that sort of...
Well, I'm going to intervene. I'm going to do an Andrew Clover and actually say this square beetle is in the shop too. You've got to deal with the bat and this now.
Yeah, bat and the beetle.
Yeah.
In the shop.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
I'm going to put them in a box.
Okay, where do you... But then they're in the box.
Well, they're in the box together, which might be a problem.
The box is addressed to Saatchi, Charles Saatchi.
Right.
You need to be careful that this doesn't get accidentally... You need to be careful here, because the postman... You've seen the postman outside.
Well, as it is, strangely, the bookshop where I work, they will be attending the British Art Fair next week, which is at the Saatchi Gallery.
Oh.
Now, did you know that, or have you just plucked that out of the air?
No, I'm just trying to randomise this.
So we will be sending to the British Art Fair a box containing a large square beetle and a bat.
Then the problem starts.
So
the story is now progressing. 2 weeks later, Charles Saatchi has received the box containing the beetles and the bat, and he sends a representative.
There's only one beetle. You said beetles.
Oh, the beetle and the bat.
There's a beetle and a bat, and the beetle is a square thing. It's not sort of like an ordinary beetle.
Can it speak?
Not yet.
Can the bat speak?
I hadn't thought so.
How did you even get the bat in the box? This is retrospective.
That was a leap of that would be difficult, because handling the bat could be quite true. I mean, I visualise the bat as having quite sharp teeth, which makes it difficult to handle.
Yeah. They're slippery customers.
Yeah. But in actual fact, that's come from a... We saw an exhibition at the Villa Arson in Nice.
But this isn't in your timeline in the story. The exhibition...
But that was by an artist called Marvin Gaye Chetwynd.
Oh, yes.
Who does do very small paintings of vampire bats, and it might be that that's stuck in my mind.
Yes, and possibly her artwork is...
And the strange combination of the name, Marvin Gaye Chetwynd, is quite odd.
Yes.
In itself.
I've never understood if that's her real name or if that's...
I don't think so, because I think she changed it. I think it's become something else, Chetwynd.
Okay.
But the sort of bats with teeth do figure in these quite delicate little oil paintings.
Okay.
So anyway, so we've sent this box to Charles Saatchi.
Yeah, and all these connotations are lost on him. He sees it as actually quite offensive, because he was bitten once by a bat whilst on holiday and... suffered some severe reactions which inhibited his sexual performance
with Nigella Lawson.
Yeah, that's good. This is good storytelling here. This is working.
Hence the hostility between them.
The famous incident.
Incident.
Yeah. So he's sent representatives to the shop, and they're not friendly. You've had some awkward customers, but these people are quite demanding, and they'd like to know your personal details. They're harassing you in a way that is quite infuriating for you. So how do you...
Because they're blaming me for the bat, you mean?
Yeah, they think you actually know something about Charles's past that could jeopardise his standing as a internationally renowned art collector and curator.
Right.
Then you look behind you. Suddenly, a lady says, "Can I have a bag?"
Yes.
It creates a whirlwind of chaos. In fact, in the bookshop world, that's quite stressful when you've got
two
customers.
It is stressful. Yeah. It is stressful because of the repetition of it. Because every time somebody buys something, you have to say, "Would you like a bag?"
Yeah. And they pause.
They always pause. Yeah. And then the most annoying bit is when they say, "Do you have one?" Because then you have to stop yourself saying, "Why would I offer you a bag if I didn't have one?" So that sounds really facetious.
It's a figure of speech, though, isn't it?
But why on earth? I mean, it's such a strange thing to say. If I say to somebody, "Would you like a bag?"
Yeah.
And then they respond by saying, "Have you got one?"
Yeah.
I mean, you'd look pretty stupid if you said, "No, I haven't got one."
In 7 seconds, all these thoughts rush through your mind as you as you say.
Then they want to know, "Do I pay you for the bag?" And you say no. So that's a relief. Then there's the issue, is the bag made of plastic or paper? Because so many people now... And then there's the hesitation.
But this bag that you pick out, you realise it's not made of paper or plastic. What's it made of?
Bat's wings.
Terrifying. And then The Saatchi representatives noticed the bag, a delicate interweaving of bat's wings, right, slightly bloodied. What does it smell like?
Oh, I don't know, but strangely, it's actually sort of, it's reminded me now, of, there's this Damien Hirst thing with all these butterfly wings, isn't there? It's nailed to canvas, which is becoming quite controversial. But that's another matter.
Well, that's interesting, because these Saatchi, thugs, yeah, are actually quite smitten by the bag, and they realise this could be the new Hurst. This could be the new...
What, a batwing bag?
Yeah. They realise that you could be Batman. The...
Or Commissioner Gordon.
Possibly Commissioner Gordon, but you would rather have the commission from... I'm trying to do a bit of wordplay there.
Yeah.
All artists want a commissioner, but it's rarely that the commissioner is the artist. What's going on with the beetle in the meantime?
The beetle?
It sends you a signal, the beetle. It's a psychic beetle.
Right.
And at that moment, it's telling you something. What does it say?
Where is it at this point in time?
It's in the postal system somewhere. Oh, no, it's on Saatchi's desk, sorry.
Right.
This is appalling storytelling, sorry. Let's carry on.
It's all right. All I can think of now is Anthony Dauphet.
The famous bookseller?
Yeah, and art dealer for Gilbert and George, who came from Leicester.
Oh. And this beetle is sending you the message, Anthony Dauphet.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. What does this mean? It means you need to leave the shop. It's a code word. It's a safe word.
Yeah.
It means you're in danger.
In danger in the shop?
Yeah. According to the beetle, this is implicit in the word Anthony Dauphet. You recognise it as being... This is unusual. I don't usually receive psychic impressions.
Yeah.
In fact, I consider myself quite a sane person, living quite a rational existence in the world of paper. So you stagger out the shop in a state of shock. You realise that somehow the beetle is on your wavelength.
Right.
Which happens to be the name of your radio show.
Yeah, wavelength. Mm. Or wing length.
Wingspan.
Wingspan. Or even weave length.
Or Weaver.
Because that was the name of the program that Chris Weaver did.
This is getting a bit esoteric now, because listeners will wonder who Chris Weaver is.
Well, Chris Weaver is part of Oscillatorial Binnage.
But it turns out that Chris Weaver was responsible for weaving the bat's wings into the bag.
Yeah.
In the shop. So why did he do that?
Revenge.
Revenge, of course.
Yeah.
And you immediately summon to mind the incident that precipitated all this unpleasantness. What did you do?
What did I do?
Yeah. What did you upset him with?
I put the beetle and the bat in the same box. The same box, and the bat had sharp teeth. So I think I'm responsible for the bat attacking the beetle in the box.
Oh, and Chris is very animal orientated. He doesn't like cruelty to animals.
But imagine the mess that would have arrived on Charles Saatchi's desk. He would have opened the box and found a beetle half devoured by a bat.
Yeah, it's an offensive. Symbolically, it contains lots of references that would actually could be considered quite a controversial piece of art that's not pleasant at all. How do we conclude this?
I'm not sure, Dan. I should say thank you very much to Daniel R. Wilson.
Listeners, send in your suggestions for the end of this
coming
story.
Coming on to Wavelength.
Thanks.
Best wishes to Charles Saatchi. We wish him well, don't we?
We do. Yeah.
Free of half-eaten beetles.
Yeah.
Okay.
And bats.
This program has been brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM. If you liked what you heard and want to support our work, please make a donation at fundraiser.resonance.fm.